Two separate posts, HTML can do that, and small native web tricks worth remembering, both surfaced within the same news cycle, and together they represent something the browser standards community has been building toward for years. The argument that modern HTML and CSS are capable enough that much of what developers reach for JavaScript frameworks to accomplish is already. The web development community had an interesting convergence this week, available natively.
HTML Can Do That by Chris Burnell scored 847 upvotes, the second highest score in today's lineup, and 190 comments. The piece walks through browser-native features that many developers either don't know exist or assume require framework support. Things like the details and summary elements for accordion interfaces, the dialogue element for modals, input types that handle date pickers and color selectors, the popover API, CSS scroll-driven animations. These are shipping in major browsers now.
The business implication is real. If a development team reaches for React to build a feature that native HTML handles adequately, they're taking on framework dependency, build tooling complexity, bundle size overhead, and longer onboarding time for new developers, all for functionality that ships in the browser for free. At scale, that's a significant hidden cost.
The smaller companion piece, Small Native Web Tricks Worth Remembering, is more of a reference list, the kind of thing a developer bookmarks and returns to when they're about to install an NPM package. The HN comments on both threads were nostalgic in an interesting way. Developers with 15 plus years of experience noting that the web has genuinely matured, and the instinct to abstract everything into framework components needs revisiting.
There's a counterargument worth acknowledging, though. The HN comment threads also contained developers pointing out that browser compatibility across major browsers, while much better than it was, still has edge cases, and that frameworks like React offer not just capability but consistency, testing patterns, and a community of solutions for common problems. The just use native HTML argument can oversimplify the actual environment production teams work in.
Fair point. Though there's a version of this conversation that isn't about framework versus no framework, it's about developers knowing what the platform can do before deciding to abstract it. Ignorance of native capability is the failure mode these posts are addressing, not the existence of frameworks.
Now the Rust story is where we need to slow down, because the ArrayRef malicious crate is not a minor incident. 511 upvotes, 435 comments, and the technical details are alarming. A crate called ArrayRef, note that this is a different package from the legitimate, widely used ArrayRef crate, leveraging name confusion, contained a proc macro that executed a build time payload. That means the moment you ran cargo build with this crate in your dependency tree, arbitrary code ran on your machine. No installation prompt, no user action, just compilation.
The mechanism is what makes this particularly insidious. Proc macros in Rust are procedural macros that run at compile time to generate code. They have full system access because they're executed by the compiler with the same permissions as the user running the build. This is a known capability in Rust's design. Proc macros are powerful and intentionally have that access. But it means a malicious proc macro is essentially a malicious build script with no sandboxing.
The supply chain attack surface this creates is not hypothetical. The average Rust project pulls in dozens of dependencies, many of which are small, community-maintained packages. Each one is a potential vector if an attacker can compromise or impersonate the package. The cargo ecosystem doesn't have the equivalent of NPM's provenance attestation infrastructure at scale, and even NPM's protections haven't prevented supply chain attacks.
The HN community response was divided along predictable lines. Some argued this is a fundamental flaw in any package ecosystem that allows build time code execution, and that Rust's sandbox-free proc macro design needs rethinking. Others argued this is a people and process problem. Better name squatting prevention, verified publishers, automated malware scanning, and that changing the proc macro model would break too much of the ecosystem.
Here's where I draw in a parallel. The NPM ecosystem went through a version of this debate after a series of supply chain incidents, malicious packages exploiting typosquatting, compromised maintainer accounts, and deliberate backdoors. The mitigations that emerged were mostly process-based: package signing, provenance tracking, automated scanning. Those help, but they are probabilistic defenses, not structural ones. The Rust community is now confronting the same trade-offs.
The SafeDep write-up linked from HN goes into technical detail about how the payload was structured to evade casual inspection. That's the part that should worry security teams most. If the attack is sophisticated enough to hide in a proc macro, where reviewers aren't typically looking for runtime behavior, the detection surface is much harder to cover.